Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Jake, it didn't seem like Solo Sikoa enjoyed what came across as sort of a ceremonial, respectful, with some tension, handshake and sort of forehead touching, stare down, acknowledgement of the tribal battle that Jay and Roman were agreeing to have at SummerSlam. I didn't see that coming. I thought that was an interesting twist. I think in all of what we've seen with the bloodline and the breakup and the separation of the Usos from Roman and Heyman and Solo, this undercurrent that is more and more at the forefront now of the development of who Solo Sikoa is and how he fits into this and what part he will play later in what happens at SummerSlam or further down the line is this whole other added dimension that, you know, four or six months ago, I just don't know that we thought we'd be at this point with Solo really establishing something different than just, bodyguard type role standing in the background of the bloodline. Your thoughts on that particular aspect of this?
Yeah, I think they're setting up a situation where Solo isn't, maybe it's because of his youth or because he's a hothead or whatever the explanation ends up being, but he's not as connected to or willing to abide by some of those family traditions that they were clearly trying to invoke here during that ceremony or ritual or whatever you want to call that they were doing at the end of the show. And so that could lead to a divide between himself and Roman, particularly if he crosses a boundary that Roman doesn't want him to. So I think it's an interesting twist in the story. And, you know, depending on, you know, when Jimmy comes back, I think they have some other avenues to go down with that as well. And so I think they're still in a pretty good place with the bloodline story, even if I didn't think they did a really great job of sort of explaining some of the family dynamics there at the end.
Yeah. What would have kind of connected those dots or closed that gap for you in terms of the family dynamic? There was a lot implied, and the audience was sort of, I think, meant to infer some things, but elaborate a little bit more on what you think should have been more overt.
Well, there's clearly a tradition here, that they're trying to include in the story where, you know, disputes over leadership in the family are settled in a particular way. And, you know, there may be, like, you know, this whole segment was about rules of engagement, and we didn't really have those rules outlined to us. It was just sort of left to the audience's imagination about, you know, obviously they did say that, you know, it was the idea of, I think Roman referred to them as, was it the owners instead of the elders? I guess I can't remember which word he used, but essentially, you know, he questioned whether they were involved in choosing this tribal combat stipulation. And so I just think we need more clarity as to, you know, who are the elders? What is their interest and influence on this matter? And what are these rules that they're supposed to be following? Because clearly once they shook hands and put their foreheads together at the end of the segment, Roman was quick to shut down any physicality from Solo, like that was supposed to be outside the boundaries of the rules. Like, he can't interfere in this now. And that was, you know, obviously you can pick up on that by watching, but there really wasn't any explanation about what the ground rules are. So I think some clarity there would have been beneficial in some way.
Yeah, I think when you advertise something as the rules of engagement, I think people expect, it wasn't even advertised as like a contract signing as much as a rules of engagement, but it had the contract signing aspect to it. And then, what are the rules of engagement? It feels like the implication there is clearly there's going to be some stipulations, some things that aren't allowed that would be dishonorable, or certain things that are allowed that normally aren't, something along those lines, or a special stipulation. If we just kind of dumb it down to, it's pro wrestling, so rules of engagement means, you know, count outs, the title change hands on a count out. I don't know. Just nothing like that was addressed. I still really liked the segment, but I agree with you. It felt like we slapped a label on something and everything was sort of almost not an in-joke, but inside their traditions and culture, and we weren't really invited in to know the details of it. And so I think a lot, it didn't hurt the segment for me personally, but I cannot imagine people going, wait, what are the rules of engagement? All we know is there's a sort of formal handshake, but where they say we'll fight honorably even though we disagree. I mean, I guess maybe that was implied. And then like you said, or, you know, when I kind of began with, Solo is establishing that those things are not as important to him. And I think as we look at the journey that Roman is on, eventually towards the top babyface in this company, part of that is showing little glimpses that Roman has certain rules about being tribal chief that are important to him. And while there's tactics he uses that are dishonorable, there are certain rules that ultimately he abides by. And Solo is a younger rebel who is of a different generation and has a different mindset. If I'm reading it right, you know, I think that's what they're trying to do more than just drop seeds. They're establishing that. And
Heyman, as they were walking up the ramp to close the show, was basically in tears because he couldn't believe it was their idea, sort of invoking again that the elders put these things into motion. And I guess maybe this was a signal that they are souring on Roman as the tribal chief. I think that was supposed to be the implication.
Elaborate on that more, because I'm not fully understanding. So Heyman is upset.
Heyman was off. They were off microphone.
Yeah.
They were still on camera. And Heyman was crying, or at least some approximation of crying, saying that he couldn't believe that it was their idea. And they being, I'm assuming, the tribal elders who put them into this tribal combat scenario, where Roman actually is not just putting up the WWE Unified Championship, but also, you know, the status of tribal chief. And so I think the implication of that final moment where, as Roman was walking up the ramp looking a bit pensive and paranoid, and Heyman was, you know, crying and obviously upset, was the idea that, well, maybe they had lost the faith of the elders of the tribe and Jay was being, you know, put into a position to take over. So I think, you know, those are the things that I picked up on, but I don't know, you know, because they obviously, you know, they weren't very overt with it, that maybe we'll get some clarity on that stuff, you know, before SummerSlam on the go home show.
So the idea is Heyman is distraught because Solo broke from the parameters that the elders set forth?
I don't think so. I think it's they were caught off guard by Jay's reveal that it was the elders' idea that this be a tribal combat match.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that falls into place. Yeah, interesting. I like layers to this. So you know when you watch these, the words and then the body language, you know, the looks that Solo gives, I mean, like the nuance of his acting, it's like he captures your attention without being cartoonish about it or over the top, but you can't help but, and of course, a lot of this is they think about every angle of every camera angle, every director's cut. I mean, this stuff is mapped out in meticulous detail. But the angle that catches Solo and the way Solo's positioned, your eye is drawn to him and there's a payoff for it. And like you say, the words that Jay uses, and when the fans are chanting, Uso, that Roman got a little shaken up by it and just seemed startled and just a little thrown off and had to kind of get himself back into the zone that he was in. And again, like that's Reigns showing an aspect of himself where, and we've seen that before, he can be rattled. Like he feels so much pressure to always be in charge that anytime something seems to be falling apart, he is fearing that the elders or just the stature that he has and what's expected of somebody in that position, holding things together is very important to him, but he's very vulnerable to when things start to fall apart, that he gets shaken up, he gets startled. And I like that aspect of him too, because I think that isn't an accident. And it's not just Roman sort of selling a moment frivolously. I think that's part of his character that will mean something later.
I think that was the idea with the backstage segment. I want to say it was in like the second quarter hour after the first fatal four-way match,
mm-hmm.
where they went backstage to Roman and Solo and Heyman. And Roman was just kind of, he had that kind of thousand-yard stare,
yeah.
as he was holding on, as he was holding on to his tribal chief necklace. And, you know, and by the time like he was out there for the main event, he had fully sort of put his mask back on, you know, that he was just this overly confident, you know, I am in control of everything kind of mode. And as, you know, he learned more about the stipulation and what was happening, because, you know, clearly there had been information that was kept from him by the tribal elders, you know, the mask kind of slipped and he sort of lost that confidence. And you saw that several times during that, you know, that final segment.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Good stuff. Let's pause. Let's introduce the show. We've got an on-site correspondent coming up in a few minutes, and we're going to welcome everybody's phone calls too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, July 21st, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, and also the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch brand covering pro wrestling for over 35 years, and also the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Hotline, a VIP exclusive, and The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich and Wade, two signature VIP shows, and also our post-PLE and post-pay-per-view roundtables, among other things. And you're all welcome to go VIP and check out what that's all about. And then also have the post shows in the free Wade Keller podcast, including the weekly flagship, be presented to you with the ads and plugs removed, and sometimes VIP exclusive after shows. The place to go to find out more is pwtorch.com/govip. Multiple ways to subscribe through Patreon, directly through your Apple account if you use the Apple Podcast app. It's a really good way to get VIP podcasts, not only in your iPhone, but also with CarPlay. Or you can just get everything through our main website, which is also, by the way, compatible. The podcast feed there is compatible with Apple Podcasts, but you also get access to our ad-free website and decades of archives. pwtorch.com/govip. I think you'll really enjoy not only the new content daily that's VIP exclusive, but losing yourself in our archives of pro wrestling coverage, again, dating back 35-plus years. The other voice you hear on the show is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. We highly recommend you visit that website and also listen to their podcasts. And Jake is a big part of both, including covering SmackDown tonight. He's also part of the ProWrestling.net membership a service that includes the .net weekly flagship episode, where you and Jason talk current events and also sometimes break news and provide insider insight on things. Jake, welcome to the show. Glad you're here to co-host this episode.
Thanks for having me, Wade. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, so just tell people a little more about what you do at ProWrestling.net. I guess I covered some of the bases and how they can find out more about subscribing or just visit the website and get the free podcast.
Yeah, in addition to, you know, what you described, you know, I'm on .net Weekly with Jason. I cover SmackDown Weekly on Fridays. I also do a members exclusive audio review for SmackDown that typically appears on the site on Saturday mornings. And also I join Jason for post pay-per-view audio reviews for AEW and WWE shows. So you can check all that out at pwmembership.net.
Awesome. All right. We do have coming up in just a few minutes, our on-site correspondent is Ashley, who attended tonight. Look forward to talking to her. But first things first, we want to give out the phone numbers and invite you to call. We have a smaller listenership tonight and fewer calls because it was on FX. So I guess some people without cable didn't get to watch tonight. But it didn't feel like, and we'll get into it, didn't feel like a B show, like they just phoned it in because it'll be a smaller audience. But we do invite you to call us. We'd love to hear from first-time callers if you haven't called before. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. But again, the phone number, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. All right, so let's get to calls. Jake, we'll certainly cover more on the show if the callers don't get to it. We had the four-way match setting up finals next week for the U.S. title, Rey Mysterio against Santos Escobar set up, and Austin Theory loss in an untitled match to Santos Escobar, which can go a couple different directions. You and I both wrote about that in our reports, respectively, at ProWrestling.net and PWTorch.com. and Charlotte and Io Sky going, having a long match, and then the some fun stuff with Pretty Deadly, with one of them out injured, so sad, in a wheelchair, although very temporary, and more. So a lot more to talk about, but first things first, we'll go to calls. We got Hendrick from Portland up first, and then Brad from Florida on deck. Hendrick, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Jake. Nice to talk to you both. So, believe it or not, my main concern from this show was LA Knight. Like, I mean, is it time to pull the trigger on this guy or what? I mean, he's no spring chicken, and, like, he gets some of the biggest reactions of the night. And, I mean, heck, he even had a fairly viral video that LA Knight himself showed of people at Dynamite in Boston on Wednesday, you know, doing his yeah chant. I mean, it's just like, I don't really understand what's going on. Like, I mean, supposedly there's plans for him or whatever, but I mean, heck, I'm confused. Like, it's starting to feel frustrating. Like, why can't, I mean, he can't even win a qualifier match for a U.S. championship match. And I don't know. What do you think?
Okay, so one, I'll talk you off the ledge. I don't think you have anything to worry about. I don't think this was the circumstance where there's clearly, in this situation, an angle that they had planned, perhaps even before they were ready to go bigger with LA Knight, where they have a Rey and Santos match one-on-one that they're going to do next week. That's going to lead to one or the other earning U.S. title shot against Austin Theory. If Rey beats Escobar next week and then beats Austin Theory, Escobar can make the claim because he won this non-title match. He should be in line. Also, Escobar could turn heel on Rey next week to get that title shot, although it would be a little weird against Austin Theory going in as a heel. There's different directions that can go, but whatever they have planned is planned. And LA Knight winning the tournament by beating Rey in the finals and then maybe beating Austin Theory as a babyface isn't a bad alternative path. I mean, they could have done that, and that might be what you were rooting for. They might be thinking, we have a whole other thing we're going to do with LA Knight. It doesn't involve our secondary singles title on SmackDown and the type of feud that we want him to be in once we really solidify he's a babyface and there's a heel who gets in his face, that they might not want a U.S. title involved because they're going to have, you know, trade some wins back and forth or, you know, kind of do something different with it. And they want the Rey Escobar match. If there is a breakup, and it's not guaranteed, but if they do break them up and if Escobar turns heel, it might be important to that it's a title at stake to explain it. So I'm not worried right now. I mean, if in, you know, 3 weeks, LA Knight has done two more jobs on SmackDown and all they're doing is leaning on him doing, yeah. Okay. Now call back. We'll discuss. We'll share some of your concern, but no question, LA Knight is red hot. And I mean, I don't think he's going to be a world champion, honestly. And I'm not sure he should be, but they should make sure they're taking advantage of him in whatever way they can short of that. Jake, your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I spoke with Jason Powell a little bit about this yesterday even, and LA Knight is a unique case because he's obviously mega over, and I don't think they want to overexpose the downsides, which he would be required to work frequently as the United States champion and potentially have longer matches and title defenses on television. And I don't think his in-ring work is particularly strong or even the strongest part of his act. And so if I'm them, I'm also kind of nervous about the dog catching the car, so to speak. Like, what do you do once he wins the U.S. championship and then he goes out there and you know, continues to have sort of mediocre matches from week to week? Is that worse for him than just kind of slow burning this you know, program where he's crazy over with crowds and they're using, you know, really fun, like, off-air segments and social media appearances and promos? Like, I think he's continuing to build right now, and once they have something planned for him down the road, they're gonna execute it. But I don't know that the U.S. title is necessarily the best thing for him right now. So I was kind of relieved that he didn't end up in those finals, because I think that would be sort of a moment where he'd be forced to reckon with some of those downsides that they might not want to expose at the moment.
All right. Have we talked you off the ledge or talked down your panic, Hendrick?
Not quite. I was at WrestleMania Hollywood, and supposedly he was supposed to have a segment with Bobby Lashley where, I was there watching, and Bobby Lashley just came out and posed, and that was it. And it was just like, and someone cut the fact that LA Knight was supposed to actually be a part of that segment. So I'm afraid, Vince McMahon did not want this guy to be anything to begin with. Like, he was like, oh, who is this guy? He's too old, whatever. Like he wanted to make him a manager of the male model thing. Maybe even fire him, for God's sakes. Like, so I really have no confidence at all when Vince McMahon is still, believe it or not, running the show. And, I feel like he's just going to have an anchor, tied to his leg.
So I feel like this could be fed by clickbait panic articles or something on the internet. And because he did have it, Vince did have an issue with LA Knight. I was the one reporting that he was done because LA Knight was pushing back against how he's being utilized. And Vince didn't like it. And then when it just coincided with Paul Levesque taking over, when Vince resigned, and, Levesque knew what he had from working with him in NXT, and he saw him completely differently. And, part of it is Vince does judge against height. If the story about Adam Cole is true, being a manager, that I understand people feeling that way, but I mean, when someone gets over, I don't think there's evidence that Vince is looking at how mega over LA Knight is, and he's going, well, because he was right and I was wrong last year, I'm going to bury him. I mean, I'm just not seeing evidence of that. I think they're just sort of picking their spot. This is, catching them by a little bit by surprise. But, I mean, man, they did on Raw pre-taped interviews for three of the people in this match, and LA Knight got to come out in front of the crowd and talk. He wasn't jobbed out. I think they're in a mode where they're protecting him more, and they're giving him mic work. It seems like they know what they have in with him. And I don't think your worry is a bad thing in the sense that it emphasizes to management, if you're part of a chorus of people being worried, it's part of chorus to management and creative, and it can get to Vince McMahon, hey, people want to see him push more. But I'm just not at any kind of, even medium or high level. I'm not at a high, much less a medium level of panic. I just think they got up, this surprised them a little bit, and they are pretty meticulous about kind of planning things out and not just abandoning them for somebody who, ultimately they still see as a mega over mid-carder. And the question is when they're mega over and you're a mid-carder, how do they rearrange this split roster to take advantage of that and get him paired up in a way that's going to take advantage of it? That doesn't necessarily mean that not winning the tournament or winning the U.S. title, it doesn't mean that starting next week, we're not going to see what that thing is. Jake, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think there's also the element of, and we've heard Triple H talk about this a number of times at press conferences over the years, where there's almost like two levels of booking that they have to pay attention to. There's the obvious and overt booking that happens on television, and then there's the subtext where they try to manipulate certain fan bases. And I think that's exactly what they're doing with this LA Knight booking, where he's over, he's getting promo time, he's getting huge reactions. Obviously they hear that and they see that, they're not idiots, but they know that there's a certain group of people that they can kind of toy with by dangling the carrot and not having him be able to grab it for a while. And I think that's exactly the position that they have LA Knight in right now.
Good analysis. Hendrick, I would just say check back next week and the week after and the week after that, and you can either be like, yeah, you guys were right. They had a plan that's working out, or see, I told you so. You guys should have been more on Jeff Cuff Leather.
Well, I never want to say I told you so. Like, I mean, like I, I,
yeah,
trust me, I'm not the biggest LA Knights fan on earth. I mean, I dug him as Eli Drake and Impact and stuff. Yeah. Like, it's just like, I feel like you got a tiger by the tail, let him roar type of deal. And I don't have confidence that they will let him roar. And, you know, yeah, he's not the greatest wrestler in the world. He's a fun act to watch.
Yeah. Anything else that you want to bring up, Hendrick, besides LA Knight tonight?
Yeah, all right. why is Shotzi interfering with this match? It was actually a really great match between Io, Sky, and Charlotte, and then there's some weird, like, interference type stuff, and, like, Shotzi is not interesting. Like, I mean, she has a good look, and that's it, and that's all there's ever been for her, and it's just like, why is she ruining this match, and why is this a storyline that we even need to watch? Like, I mean, with Bayley and Shotzi, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Jake, I'll throw you first on that one. I mean, you know, WWE sometimes books multiple things at once. Io and Charlotte was a bit of a time filler. It was also a way to get Bayley some mic time and tell Michael Cole that he's been trying to ruin her life since she was born. And it was a vehicle for an angle to escalate Shotzi as a babyface, tormenting Bayley in a way that the Fiend has, you know, tormented people in his own way, including Seth Rollins at one point. Bayley's reactions are a little bit, I think, safer for her character. So I get it. I mean, it wasn't like Charlotte Io Sky was built up for a week or two or three as this really big match, and then they just didn't, you know, they ruined it. I think they felt they could do two things at once here, and I think kind of ultimately they did. So anyway, Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't hate what the direction they're going with Shotzi. What they were doing clearly wasn't working, and I think she, you know, she had a need to cut off her hair because I think she was donating it to her sister, in solidarity with her sister who's undergoing cancer treatment. So I think they managed to turn that into an angle, and it allowed her to go through a character change, which was desperately needed. I mean, she had been stale and working through the same gimmick for months and months without much success. And so I don't hate that aspect of it. And I don't really think it ruined the match because, I mean, the match went on for several minutes beyond the point of that video airing and Bayley clearing out. And I think there was numerous points beyond that where it looked like Io had several good chances to win on her own merits. And so I thought they pulled it off. And if you didn't like the Shotzi and Bayley angle aspect of it, I think that's, you know, just boils down to a matter of taste. But I don't think it ended up ruining the match. If anything, the match improved dramatically after Bayley left. You know, they had a couple of clunky interference spots, and then early on in the match it didn't appear like they were on the same page, and there were some kind of ugly looking miscommunication spots early on, and then it seemed like they pulled things together once they really got going after that point in the match. So I didn't hate the way they went about it. And I guess the jury's still out on whether the Shotzi thing is going to work. You know, they've done these kind of crazy, psychotic types of characters before, and sometimes they are successful, and sometimes they're a big swing and a miss. And I just don't know what to feel about this one yet.
Hendrick, back to you. Any thoughts on that or anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
No, that'll be it. I'll leave all the bloodline stuff for other people, but I just appreciate you both, and I hope you have a great night.
All right, cool. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, bye.
All right. You bet. Cool. All right. So, Brad, I just want to ask, can you hold on while we talk to our on-site correspondent, or do you have to sneak something in quick here?
Dude, go to the on-site. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we'll come back to you then. You called up first. I just didn't want to miss out if you had a quick thing to add. All right, so we'll move to Ashley, our on-site correspondent. Ashley, thanks for calling in after SmackDown Tonight in Orlando. Welcome.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we sure can.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so what what's your feeling coming out of the show tonight? Was it a good SmackDown? Lived up to expectations? There had to be a little bit of concern if you were aware it was going to be on FX and not Fox, that maybe it'd be more of a B show. How did it come across to you?
No, to me, and of course it could be a little biased since I was there, but it was just a great show. I mean, there were maybe like one or two like lull moments, I would say, if you even want to call it that. But the way they paced it and just ordered it from the opening match to obviously the ending segment with the Bloodline, which obviously they're always in the main event, but I think they really laid it out well. And I called in right on the tail end of you guys talking about LA Knight, but yeah, that reaction for him is just out of this world. So that was a fun way to get the night started.
Yeah, so talk more about LA Knight. Like, as you're coming in the building, were people yelling, yeah, or any of his catchphrases? Or, like, was there, like, a buzz in the building for him? And then talk about, if so or even if not, the reaction for him coming out relative to other big stars on this show, including Jey Uso, for that matter.
Yeah, no, I would say he circles up the top three. So I would say Roman, Jey, and then LA Knight for sure. And even then, it's close with him and Jey, because it's just like I said, I missed the beginning part of what you guys were talking about with LA Knight. But I have heard previous shows with you, Wade. But I'm kind of in the ball camp where I'm concerned that this may be like another Rusev Day type thing that they may miss out on. Again, I may just be thinking or just too paranoid there, but they obviously have something there. And I was legit shocked tonight. Everyone in my section was very shocked. Thankfully, there was a ton of Rey Mysterio fans, so that it went off well, at least in my area. I'm very interested to see what it sounded like on TV. But I think, obviously, if it was anyone else, especially like Cameron Grimes, right? Like, it would not have gotten over nearly as well. But I was legitimately shocked when LA Knight didn't win. So I'm very curious to see where they go with him going forward, because I don't know. I'm not very scared for him, but it's like, what do you like? I don't know. It's getting to that point, I think. But what do you guys think? And I think, is it Jake on the line as well? I missed the beginning. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Jake Barnett's here. Yep.
Awesome. Hey, Jake. It's a pleasure to speak with you. This is the ProWrestling.net, so it's cool to talk to you as well.
Same to you. Thanks for joining us. I guess the question that jumped up to me, Wade, when I was watching the show about LA Knight was that, you know, he gets the crazy crowd reactions, and then I feel like people don't notice that, like, he was the cause of several, like, goof-up spots in the match. Like, he's mega over, but, like, do people really want to see him have really long televised matches? Because every time I've seen him have one, it seems like he's the cause of several, like, botched spots. And so that's what makes me nervous about LA Knight more so than the company, like, misperceiving his value, is that he has, like, this glaring weakness when it comes to having really strong matches on TV and pay-per-view. And I worry that they might not, like, pull the trigger on him because of that more so than – because clearly they realize what they have. They put him out in front of crowds every week. He's getting promo time where others aren't. And so that part is recognized. But they do, you know, try to protect him as much as possible in the ring, because I think everybody who pays close attention is kind of picking up on the fact that that's one of his downsides.
Jake, before I go back to actually, what is it, do you have something in mind to mask that, or is it just put him in the ring against certain opponents who can create a lot of movement and are, you know, kind of ring generals are able to work around that? How much of a concern is that if there's ways to work around it, if they have that in mind?
Oh, I think they have ways to work around it if they put him in the ring with the right people, or cater the match to his, you know, to his strengths and his style. I guess the other option would be, you know, they have a mega over tag team champion. You know, there are two tag team champions that are mega over in Zayn and Kevin Owens. Maybe they can find him a partner and he would succeed more in that kind of environment, because I think, you know, that could be an area where the company could use a boost. The tag division needs some help. So I think they have a couple of ways that they can, you know, they can sort of channel how over this guy is into a successful program. But I think it's going to take some work. Like, if you go back and, you know, watch that match, the four-way match again, and spots where There was a couple where, you know, Grimes was supposed to, like, knock him off the apron, and he was out of position, and Rey Mysterio had to quickly ad-lib a head scissors to kind of make the spot happen twice. You know, things where veterans are covering for him, and I just don't know if they want to, like, make that happen all the time as he moves up the card. That's where my sort of anxiety comes in about LA Knight.
Yeah, yeah. Ashley, back to you. Anything else you want to say about LA Knight and how things went in the arena for him tonight?
Yeah, just one quick follow-up. I kind of noticed there, or at least it stood out more so being in person, and it kind of clicked that kind of is very interesting what you said there, Jake, and I've noticed that the matches, whatever match he's in, it's normally always, well, more so like a multi-person match than just like a singles match, but and it's never really like laid out around him. He's never really the focal point. Like, even just thinking back to the Money in the Bank briefcase match, like, he didn't really have like that many spots in that match either. So it just kind of like dawned on me tonight just watching like how often he was out in the, like, outside the ring, just kind of like, I don't want to say waiting for the spot because it wasn't obvious or anything like that, but you can just, you know, clearly see more when you're not limited to just whatever camera view is in front of you. Yeah, he's very interesting. So I'm very, very interested to see where he goes direction-wise going forward, though.
You talked about Roman being right up there with Jey Uso in terms of crowd reaction. What was the ratio of people cheering him, and did that, like, change depending on the context? Or were they just sort of reacting but not cheering him, if that's, like, possible to ascertain? So, yeah, just kind of describe the difference between the Roman reaction and the Jey reaction.
Yeah, no, and it's crazy because when Jey's music hit, we all looked at our phone because we didn't even like, the show was just kind of flying by. It didn't even realize it was 9:40 because we looked at the phone. And we're like, wow, it's almost like the show almost over already. So that was the first time, like, it was a good night. But when his music itself hit, they were actually like pumped to see him. Like, I'm not sure if like at what point they may have gone to commercial after he started his entrance, but they like, he was getting the crowd like actually pumped, like they were like, you know, like waving their hands and stuff and like singing the song along with him. And it was cool because like in the past you would wonder like if there's just like an Uso tag team type thing, but it's clear that Jey is main event Jey. Like he can be his own man. And I think that segment went over really well. At first, I was kind of, not confused, but just kind of, like, just wondering, like, where they were going with the whole, that they're having, the pretty much like a no DQ match. But, yeah, I don't know. And we were kind of expecting then to maybe have, like, Rikishi or someone come out, because the way, like, Roma was just kind of standing there and it just kind of, like, lingered for a second. But, I don't know, that was probably more so wishful thinking than anything. But, yeah, Roman, to get back to your direct question, a whole bunch of kids love Roman. Like, there's this one boy right behind me who probably has no like voice left, and his father was like, son, like, if you're gonna scream like this, we would have just stayed home, you know, like, you have to listen to them talk, you have to hear them. But he is all about Roman, so I think that initial reaction is that, oh my god, we're seeing like a big star type thing, but after that first 10-15 seconds you're like, okay, like, then you kind of like fall into place. But yeah, he's a star. And regarding the attendance too, that was one of the moments where I really looked around like the whole building, and it's insane. Like, there's probably like 1, 2, 3 seats like literally scattered around the arena, but other than that, it was completely like sold out. Even for the hard cameras, like, normally they have like that section blocked off. Like, I would say maybe 2 or 3 seats like directly around him were blocked off, but everything else was just completely booked. So they're cooking right now. It's great to see.
Jake, do you have a question for Ashley?
Yeah, I guess I was curious because how it came across during the main event segment, if there was a lot more crowd noise than the way it appeared on television, because it really did appear like one of the quieter, like, Bloodline segments, at least to my ear, you know, and I guess everybody's sound system is different and whatnot. So was it really loud in the building for the back and forth, or were people quiet, like they were paying attention? I guess it was a bit hard to tell just based on the camera shots that we were seeing.
Yeah, no, people were definitely intrigued, and they're definitely trying to pay attention, especially when Roman had the mic. Like, they were just intrigued in what he was saying, and with Jey's responses as well. Like, everyone, they're just more so hooked to hear exactly what was happening. But then, like I said too, like, once they stood up and once Roman put the lay like on the title itself, people, that's when they kind of expected, like, something, like, either, like, maybe not, the guy right beside me thought maybe Rikishi, but then a couple people were saying, like, maybe Jimmy's going to come back, so I think that's kind of what they were waiting for, too, just, like, anticipating something, and then once we kind of realized, like, no one is coming out, like, it wasn't a letdown by any means, it was just like, okay, like, that's the end of it. But like I said, like, a lot of us were just even surprised that it was the main event time to begin with, because the night just kind of flew by.
Reaction for Dominic, that's been a story for people attending these shows. What talk about that.
Yeah, so Dominic, funny. So I now, I live in Orlando now. I live, like, maybe 10 minutes from Full Sail where they do NXT. So what was it, last week when he, I think it was last week, time is weird nowadays, but when he won, when he was there for the, oh, I'm sorry, 2 weeks ago when Judgment Day first went down, they, NXT, they'll send out, like, blast emails, you know, like, a few days prior to sign up for the tickets. So I did, a couple other people. We all get there, and they are completely booked up. They said that they had people literally camping out in the parking lot there since, like, 9 that morning just to get there because of the Judgment Day were there. Like, we had kids crying because they weren't going to see Rhea, and then this one kid was literally mad that he wasn't going to be able to yell at Dominic. Like, he was, like, mad at his dad because he can't yell at Dominic. So I'm like, okay, like, something's right here. And then it just translated over again tonight, too. I don't know if it's obviously, like, the same area, but kids hate him. Kids definitely hate him. Like, everyone hates him. And once we realized that we were getting that match tonight, like, I myself was pumped because I was bummed I wasn't able to get in there and boo him myself. But, yeah, like, Dominic, it's just so fun to hate him. And no part of anyone, at least around me, like, even thought to, like, just be like that person and cheer him. You know what I mean? Like, it was, everyone was on the same page. Like, no, like, you know what? Like, this guy sucks type thing. And Rhea is just so perfect. Like, the way she just lays on the apron and just, like, her mannerisms. Just the way she, towards the end of the match, I don't know how it came off on the camera, but when Dominic was going for, like, the roll-up or on Pete Dunne, I think he was too close to the ropes or something, so Rhea kind of, like, pushed him a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Dominic, like, rolled Pete Dunne or pushed over a little bit more, and then he got the 1-2-3. So stuff like that, like, it's just, I don't know, Rhea, like, obviously Dom is doing his thing, but Rhea is just unbelievable, too. So that's a sight to see in person, I think. The pair, obviously, because, like you guys have said, it's just such a callback to Eddie and China back in the day. Like, and for me, like, with the hair that Dominic has and everything, it's just so fun. So I between LA Knight and Roman and Dominic, those are, like, my reasons to go there for sure.
I'm curious, Jake, do you think the botch by Dom trying to get the pin too near the ropes was intentional so Rhea could be seen on camera kind of coaching Dominic, whose gimmick is he's an inexperienced punk who cheats to win and doesn't do anything on his own, as Cole said? Or do you think he actually did just get a little too close and she was trying to save the day and it was improvised?
Based on the fact that referee Jessica Carr screamed at him that he was under the ropes, I think he was not supposed to be there at that particular time.
That might be a good clue.
And Rhea's, the terror on Rhea's face as she was shoving him away was like, no, you've got to get in position, dummy. So I think it was just a legitimate screw-up on his part.
What's funny is it works. Like, you could plan that every match now.
Right.
Because if it was an accident, it's like a happy accident. Dom just at the end, he's like, oh, no. I put the submission hold on the guy, but he's right near the ropes. And Rhea's like, no, middle of the ring. He's like, oh, darn. And it could be something that people make fun of Dom for. So maybe they stumbled onto something that can be of a theme of his matches.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I don't think they could really go wrong with them.
What's that, Ashley?
Yeah. No. I was just going to say, and that, you know what, eating grin that Dominic has now when he wins, it's just the icing on top, especially for little things like that. Like, because, like, even if it wasn't intentional, like, we don't know, you know, because he's just that kind of guy.
Yeah. Charlotte, I'm curious about how fans react to you, because there was a point where there was an Io chant, and, you know, Io is Bailey's cohort, sidekick, protege. Fans kind of want her to break away. She's a good wrestler. You know, it's understandable they would like her because, you know, it seems like we're destined for an issue between them. But I'm curious what the dynamic was with Charlotte compared to Io on ring entrances, and then as the match progressed, how fans reacted to different moments there.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, too. Like, with Charlotte, it was kind of similar to, like, the Roman thing. Like, you react initially because you know, like, a star is there, right? But even by the time, like, her entrance, like, when she was getting in the ring, getting her robe taken off and all that, it was just kind of, like, it just kind of died down. And it's just, like, okay, it's just kind of, like, the same, we've seen it type thing. So I don't know. I was very happy that Io got a nice reaction and a nice chant. At one point, it was kind of back and forth. I think it was, like, let's go Charlotte, let's go Io, I think, at one point. So Charlotte definitely had some fans, but I think they just really need to just focus on, like, pushing Io, like, as a face and just figure out what they're doing with damage control and her and Bailey. And we couldn't really hear, or at least I couldn't in my section, what they were saying backstage. But after the match, they pretty much were just, like, grabbing their stuff and leaving, right, because Bailey was kind of freaked out when they showed, like, the backstage segment with Bailey and Io. Was that pretty much it?
Yeah. I mean, they went.
Okay.
Yeah.
I crazy in thinking this, but, like, it for me, to me, like, at this point, Charlotte, and it's a lot like Joe Pesci or Clint Eastwood or Al Pacino. Like, she's gotten to the point where it doesn't matter whether she's in a Western or a space opera or a superhero movie. She's playing Charlotte Flair, and she's not really playing a character anymore.
Right.
And I think that hurts her to a degree, because it seems like she's reached the point where, and maybe she doesn't feel this way, and it's, you know, creative or vice versa, but they've sort of gotten to the point where it doesn't seem like she's growing as a character or a performer, and she gets those legacy pops, and she has good matches, but there's just no spark there with Charlotte for me anymore, and it's been that way for a while.
Actually, what do you think about Charlotte and the notion, and I've said it too, Jake, that she isn't really a face or heel. She's just a legend. She's a flair. And they're done trying to make fans boo her because they like to woo and react to her as a star. But they also are done portraying her as a full-fledged babyface because she's bigger than her opponents and there's sort of an arrogance to her. And so they're just kind of in this zone of, all right, they kind of throwing their hands up and going, you know, that's kind of in part why there's a triple threat. What do you think about, Ashley, how she's being portrayed these days?
I really wish they would just let her play a heel and just stick with it. Like, I get whenever she leaves and comes back, like, she's going to have, like, that good response. Anyone is, right? But, like, to me, she's just a natural heel. Like, she's just the mannerisms and just, like, the little things and just the hair flips and just the, like, facial expressions. And there was even this one point as she was in a crossface. Io had her in a crossface, and, like, her hair was completely covering her face, so you couldn't see it at all. And so she, I don't know if, well, I'm sure she did, but I don't know if it was just because it was in her face or it was, like, a multifaceted reason, but she moved her hair out of her face because, obviously, like, the money is in your face, right, to sell and evoke that emotion and stuff like that. And she had, after that, eventually ended up reversing out of it and carrying on. But just, like, little things like that, she's really good at. And it's frustrating for me as a fan because I'm not a Charlotte hater. I want to dislike her as a character, but I'm mm-hmm. sick and tired of the attempted moonsault that never connects. But, like, other than that, like, I don't hate Charlotte, you know. Like, I'm not one of those, you know. Like, I want to, like I said, dislike her for her character reasons. But, like Jake was saying, you get that legacy pop, and it's kind of even strange saying that. And I don't mean any disrespect, but it's kind of like when you think of her, Bailey, Becky, and Sasha all starting around the same time, and to think that she's already in that legacy category, whereas Bailey and even Sasha and oh my gosh, I'm blanking, but they're all still kind of like growing, I would say, in my opinion. And just the fact that Charlotte, if either directly or indirectly or whatever, is just a level above them is still kind of strange for me as a fan. I'm still trying to figure that out, whether that's just because there's a flair thing and or not, but I don't know. To me, like I said, I respect Charlotte. I just want them to stick with her in one direction and not way back and forth. And I think that's kind of, to her credit or to her defense, I would say that's probably been a fault of theirs, right? Because it's been back and forth. But I was actually, between that match, the opening match, the Charlotte and Io match, and then the Austin Theory and Escobar match, I was very surprised with all three of those finishes. So they got me on all those tonight. But I did not expect Escobar to just win cleanly over Austin Theory either. I'm not sure if you guys had already talked about that match at the beginning.
Well, I'll go back to Charlotte for just a sec, because I've been told multiple times she yeah. does not like being a baby face. And so, like, her goal, her choice would be to be a heel, but fans keep cheering her at times, and management, you know, thinks, well, with the woos, you know, then she's got to do this. So I think she sort of fights any time that she's framed as a baby face, almost in protest. And then that can come across yeah. as, well, doesn't she know what she's doing? But she's kind of trying to steer management away from inviting cheers because she just doesn't want to play that role. But it can lead to, I think, ambiguity or frustration if management's like, yeah, but people pop for you and we're fighting a headwind and we have some heel opponents we think you're better against and you're a legend. So, yeah, it's just she feels, I don't know if lost is the word, but like Jake said, she just sort of is Charlotte Flair now. And I've been observing that too. You know, I think she's just Charlotte Flair, and she's a big deal, but it's sort of like, you know, when Flair would go from territory to territory, he'd either face a top heel or a top face, and he'd kind of play the role as needed for that. You know, he was a face in the Carolinas, and then he'd be heel in world class and that kind of thing. You know, it was circumstantial and territorial, and maybe she's playing off of that a little bit. Ashley, did anything happen before or after SmackDown at all of note?
I got there right before, like right a few minutes before 8, so I missed the opening match. I know they did have one, but I missed that. And after, they immediately were going into Grayson Waller versus AJ Styles, and then Drew McIntyre, and I forget who he was facing off against. But those were the two double main events that they were advertising for after the show, or after SmackDown itself proper ended. But that was pretty much it. I didn't stick around for that because I wanted to beat the traffic and still figuring out Orlando. And it's a real city down here compared to Richmond, so I wanted to beat the traffic. But, yeah, no, it's great. And like I said, this was my first WWE show since WrestleMania 35. I've been to AEW
oh, wow.
shows since then. So it was, mainly with the pandemic. But it was just not jarring because that's too strong of a word, but it was very – I don't know. It was interesting just seeing the dynamics in the crowd and just the differences. It was definitely more family friendly, but then again, it wasn't like even prior to WrestleMania, like 35, like 2019, like where it was just like, you didn't get that kid, like it was like kid centric or like family even centric, but there was definitely a whole bunch of families there. And I did want to, because and not to bring it up or comparison or anything, but the merch fans are night and day, and it's frustrating because mm-hmm. like I'm that person that like saves money to, you know, like if I'm gonna go to the show, I want to get like merchandise or whatever. In AEW, like all of your correspondents have said, is they are definitely lacking in the merch. They have like legit like maybe like four different shirts, and that's it. Tonight, WWE had like at probably at least like 20 different types of styles, and they even have like Cody Rhodes and like that, of course, John Cena, of course, like your Orlando 316, but then they had like your what you would expect to like Roman Reigns, LA Knight. I will say I was upset about the LA Knight though, because it was only the red and yellow version, and I won't buy the red and yellow version. I want a different one at least, but that's that. But yeah, it's definitely cool. But like I said earlier, it's a good vibe. So anyone who's maybe like on the fence about going to a WWE show if you haven't been in a while, I would say definitely go. It's like I said, even if you get cheap seats, it's a good time.
Was there a good flow to the show compared to, I guess WrestleMania doesn't count, but other TV events you might have gone to, but just in general, tonight flow, or did you feel like you were a prop in the crowd? That was certainly a theme pre-pandemic. We had on-site correspondents go, we felt like a prop in the crowd. You know, there's just a lot of dead space, a lot of video packages. How was the flow from a live experience for you? And during downtimes when it wasn't cutting away from a match for commercial, did they do things with Mike Rome, I think is the ring announcer, to entertain the fans?
Yeah, and I did notice now, and I have never noticed it before, looking at the big jumbo screen at the top of in the center of the arena, you can notice if you're looking at that monitor, like at that moment, that it does kind of quickly fade to black really quick and they're going to commercial. So that was pretty cool. So you definitively know if you're looking at the screen at that time. But yeah, Mike Rome does a great job. Nothing really like stood out. They did a dance cam at one point during commercials, and then it's like the sign of the night thing, which is pretty standard. But regarding like being a prop, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's actually a point that I wanted to make in comparison to previous shows. And again, it may not be fair because I'm originally from Richmond, Virginia, which is night and day compared to Orlando in a lot of ways, but the energy was completely different, but even the show itself, like, felt different. Like, the production felt different, whereas before, like, you did feel like a prop, and they were more controlling, right? Like, they would tell you to sit down more or just not, I don't want to say not be as loud, but just mainly, like, the whole sitting down part, they were just kind of, like, controlling in that regard. But tonight, they just, everyone was just there to have a good time. No one was really, like, security-wise telling people, like, specifically what to do. And it was just very interactive. And we did have, I would say, a good amount of video packages, but it didn't even mess up the flow. It just kind of continued and carried on. It did seem a little NXT heavy or heavier than normal, but that, like I said,
yes,
makes sense because of where we're at as well. So, but that wasn't even a bad thing. And it was cool seeing Shawn Michaels really quick. That was kind of cool. I love Shawn, so that's always fun.
I don't know if you got there in time to see it or notice, but I forget to ask sometimes, did Michael Cole and Wade Barrett come out separately, and did they get crowd reactions?
Yes, they did come out separately. And Michael Cole, I was so happy because Michael Cole finally got some love. So I have no idea what music they chose for him or who made that or where they got that from, but it's probably some free catalog somewhere, bless his heart. But he finally got some flowers and some cheers tonight, and I was so happy because I am not a Michael Cole hater. He is great. And especially ever since Vince McMahon has been gone, or he left and then came back, whatever he's doing now. This new Michael Cole that we've gotten, it's just, I'm such a big fan. And I was kind of bummed when Pat McAfee thought that Michael may revert to like his like old version of himself or whatever, or just may not be as fun, but no, like, he's not the version of Michael that we get with Pat, because I think they're just, like, probably closer as friends. We just have, like, a different dynamic in their friendship. But I love him and Wade Barrett, and Wade Barrett got a good reaction, too. But Michael, maybe just Michael stood out because normally in the past, like, when he would come out, he would legit just get straight boos. Like, you would think, like, this man just, like, kicked a kitten or something. It's like, what is happening? But no, like, he actually got some flowers tonight, so I was happy with that.
Jake, is there anything else you want to ask Ashley about?
I guess the Austin Theory and Santos Escobar match, the last 30 seconds when, you know, they did that crazy top rope Hurricane Rana into the Phantom Driver. It seemed like the crowd like really came alive for Escobar, you know, when he was on offense, but Austin Theory continues to be, I don't know. It seems like crowds die whenever he's in control of a match. Did you get the same impression in the building, or is that just me trying to listen too much to my TV speakers?
No, but then again, I don't know if it's just me being too much Team Wade on this one, but I have hope for Austin Theory. So no matter what Todd Martin says, either I have hope for Austin Theory. I don't know. If you were to grill me, I couldn't even put my finger on it besides, like, all the John Cena, like, cliche comparisons. Like, it's not even that. Like, yes, he's not the most entertaining, and he's not, like, the most polished or anything right now, but to me, I think that there's still something there. Like, the way he does go through the motions and the way he rolls through the moves and the way he hits the ropes and the way he hits the turnbuckles, like, there's just, to me, like, there's just little things that he does that something's there, and you see the eagerness in him. So for me personally, and again, I don't know if it's just bias here or whatever, but something's there for me. And again, I'm not going to sit there and say like I sit on the edge of my seat waiting for him to come out or anything, but I have hope for him. But yeah, like it was, I would say that was probably like one of the like lull moments I was referring to earlier, but it wasn't even like people were going and like leaving their seats. And for that matter, like I don't even recall like anyone really getting up to leave their seats at any point during the night. Which is a testament as well. But yeah, like it, like you mentioned, like the last 10, 15 seconds or whatever it was of the match, those final three sequences, like it really picked up in that short time frame. But yeah, and I kind of expected, again, like tonight I would have like failed the quiz, but I was thinking that maybe Escobar was going to turn on Ray because it's still so kind of surprising to me that they're in the finals against each other. So we'll see how that plays out. But, yeah, I don't know. I was just very, I think, of everything tonight. Well, maybe besides LA Knight losing again. I don't know. I didn't expect Theory to lose clean unless I missed something, but I was just surprised by that.
Ashley, is there anything?
Did you hear to talk about that? I'm sorry. What did you think about Theory losing?
I think Theory right now is serving a purpose of the finishes are – they're not worried about him losing right now. They're worried about the other person in the match because they're not ready to push him in a different way than they're pushing him right now. And so people read into that as, oh, he's losing momentum, he's being buried, or they're losing faith in him. And I think they're just biding time until they think he'll grow into and have been around long enough and prove to them more along the way that he's ready. And then they're not going to, they're going to think people aren't going to remember. They're going to think he's growing into a different chapter of his career. I think the things you're pointing out, the things that I point out and the things that I'm told, by people in WWE, they feel like he's a future star, at a higher level than just what he's doing now. And because I hear that, then it does, I look at him losing or being out of the mix for a month, then people thinking, see, they're done with him. They're just taking their time. They're not in a rush because they know they got something and they know there's good things about him and they will get around to it when it's time. But right now he is a utility secondary champion heel who they feel is good enough that he can absorb a loss and talk his way and bump his way back into people caring about him. Jake, how about you?
Yeah, no, I'm actually not a hater of Austin Theory. I think he's got all the tools, but that promo that John Cena cut on him before WrestleMania, the one part of it that I thought was exceedingly accurate is that he doesn't come across like he believes what he's saying. And I think that's sort of the missing piece for Theory, is that I hear him talk and I don't think that he believes in his own character. And I think that's the part that has to, he has to turn the corner on that. It's like, and I'm probably aging myself here with this reference, but there was an episode of Seinfeld where George Costanza was trying to teach Jerry how to be a good liar. And he essentially said, it's not a lie if you believe it. And I think that's where, Austin Theory needs to get to, where he feels like he's playing a character and not embodying a character. And that's where he's stuck right now.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Ashley, anything else you want to bring up or talk about?
I will say no in reference to the show, but I'm not going to be that person, because yes, just for closing, and then I'll let you mute me or whatever. But I just want to say thank you for letting me call in tonight and be a correspondent. I really appreciate it. Jake, I love your work. You and Jason Powell, I listen to you guys every week. But I'm very, very excited to hear what everyone else has to say. I love listening to all the callers, like Sean from Tennessee and Brad, I think, is up next, and Javier and all you guys. I am way, like I think you've mentioned a couple of times, I am one of those wallflowers that listens and calls in sometimes.
Yes.
After the shows.
Yep.
I'm not pressing one because I don't want to talk to you guys. I would love to, but I'm normally leaving like my part time or whatever, so I've missed like the majority of the show, and I don't want to be that person calling in with like just the 5 minutes that I've seen. So I'm not pressing one because I don't want to talk to you guys, but I just never get to. So it's cool to be able to talk to you guys tonight, though, and thank you for letting me call in.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ashley. Call anytime and let us know if you go to another show.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. If you want to be an on-site correspondent like Ashley just was and do a great job like her, or even if you can't do as good of a job as her, don't worry about it. Drop me a line. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Put the name of the city in the subject line. That just helps me stay organized. And then just kind of detail what show you're going to and where in the body of the text or the email. And I'll be in touch and we'll set things up. All right, our phone number, if you want to get in line on the phone lines, is 347-215-8558, and when you call, push 1. We have Promise Brad in Florida. He's up next, and then Jay in Michigan. Hold tight. We'll get to you right after that. Brad, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
I'm going to step aside very quickly because Jay is the tribal chief of this program. He really is, man. And that's no offense to you, Wade, or obviously Jake, you're great. Ashley was tremendous, but Jay in Michigan, if you're hearing me, man, you're my favorite caller. So, and that's no offense to anyone else, but Jay is just very perceptive and phenomenal. And Ashley just did a really good job. To me, man, this show fell completely flat. And I, you know, I live in Florida. I was on the verge of buying tickets for this, but it was so hot, the tickets. You know, you're talking about for nothing that great. You were talking about like, you know, $250 a ticket. It was really, really expensive compared to other shows I've been to. And it just didn't pan out for me, but I didn't, you know, want to make the drive and everything and do that. But to me, even the Roman Reigns segment, man, it didn't hit the mark. And it's not because of a lack of action. It's not because, you know, no one got slammed through the table. It's not because of that at all. It's because I don't like my champion, and maybe this is unfair, but I don't like my champion putting down the belt that everyone in this company wants, and I love Roman, but saying this doesn't mean anything to me, and putting it down on the table. The lay obviously meant more to him, you could tell, you know, but I think that the way that they did it with them putting their heads together with the, I guess, show of respect or show of tribal respect, or I don't know exactly what that was about, but it was a little bit too much inside baseball for me. Like if I'm a more casual viewer and I don't know the inner workings of, you know, the family's respect guidelines and these sort of things, I'm saying like, what is this? And I felt like it was very slow to develop. And I felt like that segment just missed the mark completely. But, you know, I think it goes back to the start of the show. I know that Ashley said that, you know, that, you know, I think she said something like it was a really, you know, good beginning to the show, or it was perfectly laid out or something like that as a viewer on television. But even if I was in the arena, I might say to myself, you know, how do I take the air out of the balloon of this place? Oh, I'll put LA Knight as the very first match and I'll have him lose. The thing that I bet you a lot of people in attendance there were really anticipating, you know, to me, I would have had that match as the, you know, in place of the Dominic match as the quote unquote main event, which they did call Dominic's match the main event. Michael Cole said that, but I just felt like the placement was wrong. And I felt like, I mean, maybe Ashley's contradicting me, but I did feel like the crowd was flat after that, because I felt like it was like, man, our guy lost and that's it. And now what, we get a Charlotte Flair match versus EO, which means nothing. And we get a Austin Theory match, which really means nothing for a feud that's really not real right now, other than what happened tonight. And, you know, I just felt like the show did not hit the mark tonight. And I just want your guys' opinion on that.
I disagree on almost everything. I think the Bloodline segment was good. I think the opening with a really hot four-way with a red hot LA Knight is good. I'm not at all worried about LA Knight not winning for all the reasons I said earlier. I think Dominic is red hot heel right now, and saving that till later and having it develop on the show with Shawn Michaels making a cameo and helping set it up worked. I thought Charlotte and Io Sky was a good matchup that served multiple purposes, including to set up the attack by Asuka afterwards and just to have a good women's match on TV that got a good amount of TV time, which, you know, 10, 20 years ago was not something we saw very often. Yeah, I'm not nodding, you know, I'll tell you if I'm nodding along with you. I wasn't nodding along with you on that one. Jake, how about you?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I didn't think this was the strongest Bloodline segment that we've ever seen by any stretch, but I thought it was good. I kind of echo your sentiments about the LA Knight situation, Wade. I didn't come away with it thinking that, you know, this is the end of any kind of road for him. He didn't even really lose. He just didn't win. And so I don't think his reaction is going to be any smaller next week. I think there's, I guess I'd have to go back and watch the show, but it didn't seem like the crowd died after that match. I think they were quiet at points, certainly. I mentioned during, you know, when Austin Theory was on a long stretch of offense in the match with Escobar, I thought the crowd got kind of quiet. And when things weren't going particularly well in the Charlotte and Io match, with some clumsiness and whatnot, you know, the crowd was kind of quiet. But for the most part, when things were going well in the ring, I thought the crowd was responding like you'd expect. And they were super into, Dominic and booing him and Rhea. And so I thought the show was successful on its own terms. And, was it the most electric edition of SmackDown I've ever seen? No, not really. But I think they're really setting up You know, is it next week that's already the go-home show for SummerSlam, or is it the week after? I'm trying to remember.
I think we got 2 weeks because it's in August, and it's in
next
August
week's
the 28th.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, so we got two more.
Yeah, so I think, you know, they're on pace to, you know, to have a really strong go-home show with a couple of quality setup segments next week. So I didn't come away from tonight's episode feeling overly concerned about the direction of SmackDown, you know, but I guess I can't really fully disagree with the fact that it wasn't, like, the most, you know, electric edition of the show that I've seen. I just thought it was fine. Like, I didn't come away concerned at all.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're real close to each other there. I'm not like, yeah, this. I didn't think it was a red hot SmackDown, but I thought it was good. Well, that's a good show. I enjoyed it start to finish. Brad, what say you?
Yeah, no, did you guys realize also that when Shawn Michaels was out there, I don't know if it was a slip or something intentional, but when he said, this is great. I think it'll be a fantastic match between you and like he got a P, almost like done.
Almost like P done, yeah.
Like he got a P-E like out of his lips, and then he said Butch. Like, do you think that was intentional? Mm-hmm. Because I personally do not see the big deal in his name being Butch. Like I like his name being Butch. I think it's fine, and I don't think there's some huge cachet to Pete Dunne outside of like
I don't either.
You know, some independent wrestler. You know what I mean? Like I don't think it's that big of a deal. But I wonder why Shawn Michaels did that. And I wonder why Butch was, like, talking like a normal person. You know what I mean? Like, Butch, we don't really see that out of Butch, you know? So that was interesting.
I think they're basically transitioning him back into being his old character. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of the Butch transition when he looked like, you know, a chimney sweep from a Dickens novel or something. You know, like, that wasn't a great introduction for Butch. But I think they've got him back on the right page at this point. He basically looks just like he did when he was Pete Dunne.
Yeah, I think they are trying to tone down the idea that he just, you know, has to be held back and he's super, super excitable and all that, and trying to make him a little bit more of a just sort of badass with this neutralizing strategy of grabbing someone's finger and snapping it, like that's some skill that he had to go to a dojo for and study for all these, you know, for a bunch of years, which I think is really stupid. You can do joint manipulation. That doesn't look like something a 5-year-old could do by mistake to their brother, or on purpose with zero training to their brother and snap his finger. I didn't at all mind the Butch character. I thought it gave him some. I mean, Pete Dunne in a singlet wrestling NXT UK style is entertaining. It's good, but I mean, realistically, it's just not something that Vince McMahon is going to push. I mean, it just doesn't fit in the WWE landscape. To hey, it's Pete Dunne with a plain name, who is a good wrestler, who will do joint manipulation. I mean, it's just like Vince is like, what am I going to do with that? We're trying to reach millions of people, not this hardcore fan base who's going to appreciate his skill set. And I'm not demeaning that he's a great guy to go see at an indie show headline. But, I mean, realistically, WWE does not promote indie wrestling on Fox. So they needed to figure out what can we do. And I think his alliance with Sheamus and Holland has been good for him. Does that mean he has to be as cartoonish as he was? No, of course not. But it gave him a sense of purpose. I mean, I remember Nick Barbetti defending it pretty vociferously when it first happened too, either on this show with me or with Tom Colihue on their show. So I think he said it well. You know, back then it's like, you know, just there's now there's something about him, whether you like it or not. And with Pete Dunne, there was nothing about him other than he grabbed someone's finger and yanked it and we're supposed to be impressed. That was his gimmick, other than being a good wrestler. He can be a good wrestler and still have a gimmicky personality. But like Jake, you said, a lot of people felt it was just kind of too kind of cartoonish and over the top. And it does seem like they're transitioning him away from that at this point and making him just kind of more of this, you know, in next to Sheamus and Holland, kind of this undersized, still somewhat feisty, but not cartoonishly feisty badass who can hang with a lot of people bigger than him. Brad, back to you.
Yeah, no, that's it. I'm going to let you get to Jay. I actually really want to hear Jay talk. And, that's it.
Jay,
listen,
Jay hung up.
If you can,
you talk too long.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah,
really? Jay,
hang up,
call
so.
Back, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, that's really all
I
have to say. I think he's in Michigan. I think Michigan's as far as you can go east and still be on Eastern time zone. I think so. But,
oh, okay.
Or as far as
Chicago
you can go west
Central, but
and still be,
yeah.
Yeah. But I guess if Jay's not there, the only reason also, like, I was so down on Roman segment, and it's not like it means that much to me, but was, like, I didn't really come away from it understanding that this was going to be, like, a tribal rules. I mean, I know that he said, Jay said tribal rules, but it wasn't like Cole was like, this is a tribal rules match. You know, like, it didn't come away with anything that said, like, oh, this is the type of match it is. It's no disqualification other than, you know, Jay said, yeah, I could hit you with a chair, I could do this. I just thought, like, they were talking about, like, you know, what their family would okay or something. I don't know. It just didn't seem clear to me. And even, you know, the thing where Roman stopped Solo, I didn't understand at all why he did that, you know, at all, because that's a very noble thing to do, and that's not really the tribal chief's thing. So I guess I'll hang up and listen to you guys, but thanks for having me on, and listen, we all have our opinions, and that was mine, but I love listening to you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad. Well, that's why I opened the phone lines, because either people have different opinions and they're valid, just because they're opinions, or we talk about them and try to, you know, talk people off ledges or give another perspective. And certainly callers have changed my viewpoint on things too, when I see things through a different lens. Jake, your thoughts on Brad's last topic.
Sorry, caught myself on mute there.
Yeah.
I don't think I really have a lot to add. I think we got through everything there. I mean, we're all going to have differing opinions, and that's just perfectly fine. Like, I don't expect anybody to agree with everything that comes out of my mouth, that's for sure.
Well, they won't agree, but they are wrong.
No. Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of implied, but
Yes, of course. Yes. All right, very good. So, give us a call if you want, if you're still listening, 347-215-8558. Don't have a lot more that I need to necessarily bring up myself, but I will bring up, Jake, your thoughts on Cameron Grimes so far. My take is he doesn't have a character and he's not being protected. Granted, among these four wrestlers, you would think he'd be the one to lose unless Ray wasn't going to win, because they feel like Ray can lose and that he can still be popular. But since they wanted Ray to advance, I don't think they're going to have Sheamus lose. And I think people would be like, you think we got, you know, there's backlash against LA Knight's push. Imagine him losing in this match. So I'm not shocked Grimes lost, but what do you think about even putting him in this match if the idea is he was going to be the one to lose, as opposed to putting someone else in there and protecting him and letting him get some wins first and establish his character, whatever that character is going to be?
Yeah, he's in a tough spot. You know, they brought him up, and I was hoping they would do anything but make him like this happy-go-lucky, hayseed kind of character that he played for a time in NXT, and that's exactly what they went with. And I don't think much of the audience, you know, bought into the to the moon catchphrase or anything they tried to have him adopt right away. And now he's been, you know, either missing or losing on television for a while now. It almost feels like he's he's just kind of lost in the shuffle. I don't know if they're going to get back to building around him or pushing him in the short term, because it seems like they have other things planned for other people for the time being. So hopefully he can hang in there until, you know, he circles back around in orbit to the point where they're ready to give him another chance.
Yeah. Yep. Is there anything else you want to bring up, Jake, from the show tonight?
I think we got through everything. We covered all the matches and all the major story beats. It doesn't really feel like we left anything out, unless I'm forgetting something, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I can't think of anything either. I'm kind of scrolling through my report, and I mean, I think we really did, through the callers in our initial discussion, hit on everything. I'm fine signing off then. Jake, thank you. Appreciate, as always, you being on the show with me.
Always good to be with you, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jake. Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you tomorrow night after AEW Collision.